What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we are coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, we're live on YouTube, we're live on Twitch, we are live on Twitter. And if you hear those digs in the background, that's Pete making his merry way here to the show.
We put a bell around his neck so he could hear him coming, and that's the ding, ding, ding.
Absolutely. Now, I'm very excited to have you all here this evening at this wonderful show. Large Pete is what I call you. other Pete, oh. I guess Justin. Where are you coming from? You're in Phoenix right now? Is that what's going on?
I'm in Phoenix, Arizona for a job. This place is hot. I'm in an embassy suite. What a suite. Yeah, that's why you see this.
Man, is that one of those free breakfast places? Do you get a free breakfast there?
Yeah, there's free breakfast. They have a weird center area. Everything in Phoenix is like a mall. It's like a big mall. Oh. It feels like we got here. It's like everything in the city was built yesterday. Oh, and maybe it was.
Maybe. Maybe it's like, are you in Phoenix? Are you sure you're in Phoenix and it's not some sort of like con type thing where they just built a city to trap you in some way?
Let me say, the fact that it's even named Phoenix had me like, this is some sort of comic book thing mm-hmm. that I'm trapped in.
I know what it is. You're in Dark Phoenix.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, no. It'll be retconned somehow, I think. Maybe yeah. I'm going to be retconned.
Hey, should we bring our friend Pete in here? Bring him into the stream?
Pete LePage? Yeah, let's give it a shot.
Oh, hey, Pete. How's it going?
Oh, what's up, guys?
Hey, thanks for coming to the show. Always good to see you. Justin's reporting live from Dark Phoenix, we've established. Yeah. And you're coming from Days of Future Past because you're so late right now, right?
Hey, come on, man.
Yeah, sorry, I got to push my extinction agenda. Oh, man, I could actually, I ran out of crossovers. Falling's Covenant. Yeah. There you go.
I was just going to say Falling's Covenant. I was like, that one's hard to say, just regular.
Yes. Now, listen, since Pete is so on it and prepared, I'm sure he's going to love this, but once a month, we pay tribute to our Patreon supporters, people on our Patreon who donate at the $5 and above level. We say thank you. Of course, we also say thank you to anybody below that, but we specifically call out these people's names. Usually, just I'm going to say this out loud for no particular reason. I think I'll go first and say a name, and then Pete will go second, and then Justin will go third, and then we'll kind of go around from there. Sound good to everybody?
Yeah, sounds great.
I love it.
Okay. Well, let's kick it off saying a big thank you to Oitis Larson.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Harwitz.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Elena Fontenot.
Amanda Harris.
Andrew.
Andrew Prima.
Andrew Tillman.
Beercat, PhD.
Benjamin Brown.
Carly W.
Carrie Matthews.
Chris Leatherman.
Christina Jeremilo.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terlizzi.
Clemens Lua.
Curtis LaRock.
Demand Ryan.
Damian Becton.
Dan Snow.
Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Closing out the Danny Black with Danny Heck.
Kicking off the Debbie Block with Debbie Gloom.
Dennis Scott.
Derek Mainhart.
Doug Sadoway.
Dylan LJ.
Eduardo Martinez.
Aaron Durian.
Jeffrey Risher.
Gerard DeVillier.
Isaac Carter.
Jake Fry.
James Connolly.
James Kurtz.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
John George.
John Henderson.
Jonathan Jong.
Jonathan McCool.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Julian Lobato.
KC Newhaven.
Don't do the crimes if you can't pay the Kevin Grimes.
I came to Kevin Clyde Rock. No, that didn't work as well. I'm sorry.
Kieran Broderick.
Cody Thomas.
Luana Thomas.
Lucas Sink.
Mark Zeller.
Matt Tice.
Matthew C. Hernandez.
Michael Tillman.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef Brett Macris.
Omnia Soul Art.
Oren Dix.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Pete's Pretty Kitty.
Prime.
Ring, ring, ring. It's time to call the provocative ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettenout.
Sarah Schottmuller.
Sarah Schaefer.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Stanley.
Tamelia Rush.
Taylor Bryan.
Terrible Jason.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
William Leach.
Zachary Bachman.
Zika's Viral Comics.
Thank you all so much for your support of the show. We really appreciate it. If you would like to support it, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Not only do you get access to our very active, very fun Patreon Slack, but you also get our back catalog from 2011 through 2022. That is thousands of podcasts at your disposal to listen to at any time. I think it's cool. Hopefully you all think it's cool too. Now listen, we are going to bring in our first guest here back to the show. He's the creator of a new book from Image Comics called Indigo Children. Ladies and gentlemen, Kurt Pyers. Hello, Kurt. Welcome back.
Hey.
What's up, guys? Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, so excited to talk about this book. Yeah. We reviewed the first issue on our Stack podcast and absolutely loved it. We're blown away. Thought it was very interesting given the span of your work and how it connects to other things that you've done, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a moment. But overall, since there's a lot of twists and turns, and I know I've been doing this a lot on the show for anybody who's listening consistently, but I never want to blow up spoilers that the creator doesn't want to say. So what's your pitch for the book? Like when you're saying, here's what Indigo Children is, a lot of it is what you discover as a reader over the first issue. But what's the selling point you've been giving to people?
So I always fall back on the really annoying Hollywood elevator pitch stuff. I think that's the easiest way to sell the books, even though some people, get angry when you do that. And probably the best one I've heard, and I think the guys at Challengers Comics in Chicago, they pitched it as like Department of Truth meets Umbrella Academy or, X-Files So it's like a grounded conspiracy thriller / mystery about this journalist who's investigating the Indigo Children, who are these kids gifted with extraordinary abilities who just disappeared out of nowhere 15 years ago. And there's sort of like scarce evidence about them and all this sort of stuff. And he's really obsessed with it. And in his past, he's maybe witnessed, one of the kids. And so it's like a grounded entry point into this conspiracy narrative that centers around like gifted children, which obviously, touches on kind of a bit of the superhero thing. But I think our way into it is hopefully really cool and fresh and just made to be accessible to people.
Yeah. And I sort of read it as, I'll throw my pitch back at you. Lost if they didn't completely ignore the Walt storyline and actually dealt with all that stuff that they set up.
That's a good one. That's a bit harder to sell to people than my annoying. Fair. But I like that. I'm a Lost guy. So, yeah, that was weird. The polar bear stuff, they just like threw it in there. Then they're like, oops, we forgot about it.
Oops, never mind. Yeah,
I'm sorry. That just because we're talking about Lost, though, the Walt stuff led to one of the best lines in the history of the show when they had the time jump because Walt was back in, the regular timeline off the island. And somebody tells Sawyer, Walt got large. And Sawyer says, like a giant? Which is this great line that just plays off of like, you don't know what's going to happen on Lost. They don't know what's going to happen. Everything's been so crazy.
That's what
so
they intended the whole time, is to lead up to that one joke. For
I stopped watching after that because I was so happy.
Yeah.
Anyway, cool. Back to Indigo Children.
No wonder you love it.
So with Indigo Children, like I said, and like we've been talking about, there's a little bit of a mystery in terms of exactly what's going on that plays out over the course of the first issue, which is out now, by the way. Anybody can pick it up from Image Comics. Second issue is coming out at the end of the month. I'm not going to say anything about that, but things take wild, huge turns in there with some big, enormous action scenes that happen. But to talk about this issue in particular, how did you embrace the mystery? How did you decide to lay out the information as you laid it out over the course of the issue? What was important to you in terms of the pacing there?
I wish I had a great answer, but I think I wrote this issue in in a couple days, I was really like obsessively writing it. And I think the first thing I came up with that opening sequence, and then obviously I wanted to, the first issue is kind of a puzzle box where you start with this time, this like precursor sequence, and then you go into the present. And at the very end, we sort of go back to that first sequence and like pull the rug out from under you. So I think I wanted to do a big meaty first issue that like could function on its own, right? It's kind of like when you have not to pull too much into the TV stuff again, but it's when you have like a extra length pilot or whatever, and you feel like, oh, that's sort of a mini movie or whatever. Like I was really interested in it and obsessed with making it as compelling as possible and as tightly constructed as possible.
Well, go ahead, Justin. You were going to ask something.
Yeah, I was going to compare this to another book of yours. It's only Teenage Wasteland, which is out now. Another book we've talked about a lot. And it feels like Indigo Children really is like sort of more tense thriller, while only Teenage Wasteland gets to have sort of the fun. But neither world is slacking on the big swing sort of sci-fi fantasy of it. Were you working on these together? What was the timeline for both of these books?
So I think I started working on Indigo Children first. We've been working on Indigo Children for almost 3 years now. We did another book at Image. And then about 6 months after we finished that, we sort of decided to do this and pitch it to them. And it's just coming out now because the Image books was sort of working on around the rest of the schedule, which is sort of fun in a way because it gave us the time to really like fine tune the thing. But Teenage Wasteland was a much shorter incubation period. I think what happened with that book was I had the idea that I wanted to do like a comedy that dovetailed into like a harder, weird sci-fi direction and have it be sort of character based. And initially I was thinking of it being older characters, and then just thinking about things and working on youth and stuff and sort of meditating on it, I realized, oh no, I need to do this as like a teen party thing and kind of tap into that sort of foundational narrative of, you know, those coming of age films, and then just, you know, again, pull the rug out under from people and the artist of the book sort of described it as like a beat switch. When you have a beat switch in a song, right? And it's easy what you're listening to. And that's sort of what the ending of the first issue of Teenage Wasteland is, as well as the last issue. It has one of those, right, where it's like you think it's all going to wrap up, and we sort of just throw them deeper into the shit.
I just want to mention real quick, just to bring together two discussions here while we're talking about It's Only Teenage Wasteland. There's an exchange that happens, I think, in the third issue, where somebody says, this is some lost bullshit. And then another character says, we do not take David Lindelof slander in this house, but yes, this is some lost bullshit. Amazing sequence. When we read that in advance, again, for our Stack podcast, and I was like, this is going to be my new Twitter editor. And it is. It is my Twitter.
I saw when you tweeted that, and we had a good interaction there because I've been I was tuning in a bit. I stopped watching, to be honest, because I find it very weird to watch reviews of my stuff. It triggers, you know, the anxiety in me a lot, and it just makes my brain feel fried. While I was watching it for you guys, because I thought it was like really funny, And yeah, you guys, I like the show, so it's funny, and I appreciate you guys. Oh. You can tell you really like the
Well,
jokes.
Thank you, Kurt. We really love your writing, man. To kind of bring it back to the one we're talking about here, Indigo Children.
No, keep talking about Lost.
Nope, trying to move off that. I'd love to, because this is based on true stuff, I'd love to like know how much research you had to do, or did you go down like a rabbit hole? And when you were talking, two-part question, sorry. And for the second part, when you were talking to the artists, were you like, no, make the kids creepier? Yeah, creepy.
uh, That's funny. So the research stuff, I think it really was inspired by this one piece of this article that I found that was about sort of this Russian kid who's sort of like the inspiration for our like main kid. I was like, this kid claims he's a, you know, reborn Martian, all this stuff. He's like a child genius, and he was saying all this fucked up stuff, right? Wow. And so, like, what happened was I was on, and this is a really funny story because it's kind of lame, but I was on Snapchat because my brother sends me, like, would send me pictures of his dogs, but I never use Snapchat because it's an app for, like, you know, 15-year-old girls or whatever. I was on there, and I was, like, flicking through it, and it was, that's where I found it. I was like, holy shit, and I started Googling and stuff, and it's really... That was the inspiration of the story because, like, you can't really find all this information on this kid or, like, what the fuck happened to him. So I was just, like, might start filling in the blanks and obviously doing the weird, you know, mashup of the conspiracy stuff and, like, Steven Spielberg stuff I like and sort of grounded superhero stuff. So that was where that came from. And then the creepy kid stuff, no, that was all him. So I blame him. But I think one of the creepiest things we did was when we added that, like, the VHS thing, I think makes it so creepier. That's, like, my favorite part of the book. And that's something I worked on, like, really nailing is that, like, slow zoom out or whatever, and it starts to pixelate. I'm like, I was looking at it today. I'm like, man, this is so creepy. Just, like, even though we made the thing, I'm like, this is, happy with that.
I mean, it was interesting to me that Justin mentioned it's only Teenage Wasteland, which obviously, like, there are similarities there. But this seems a lot closer to me to Youth, another book that you do that's also, like, slowly creeps up on being about superpowered children. What is it about throwing teens into these wild sci-fi situations that's interesting to you?
I mean, I honestly think about that myself because I don't know why I'm writing so many teens. It's like,
so you're on Snapchat too.
Yeah, you're on Snapchat. You got
that Snapchat inspiration.
And you're creepy. But I think teens are such interesting characters because, like, they're so volatile and everything's in flux, right? So when you throw them into these big situations, you have so much room to play around, and I think they're just sort of like mirrors which we can sort of project a lot of adults' personal issues and all this stuff, right? So they're sort of ciphers, and I think that's, like, outside of my work, if you look at something like, you know, Yellow Jackets, I think one reason that show is so good is because there's such that the teens in that are reflective of so many different people, and we can all sort of, you know, see ourselves in them. So I think that's why I'm drawn to that. And I think also, like, a lot of people, good or bad, you have such formative memories around that time. It's like a key period. So I think that's sort of why I keep going back to that. Well,
cool. Do you want to skew older potentially with the next thing just to kind of change it up a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be doing teen stuff. It's kind of, you know, I mean, that dude. But I think the books, like, vary, right? They just, these books kind of come out close to each other. So it feels like, oh, it's a lot of teen stuff. But we've got a lot of different books coming out, right? But already thinking about it, one of them also has teens in it. So, you know, fuck me.
We got a question here on YouTube from Derek Mainhart. Says, given the teen angle, would Kurt ever consider writing for Archie?
Mike, well, thanks for the question and tuning in first off. And I don't know if I would be right for it, but I would, like, do something. I would do a short or something. You know, it's such a historic comic, but I don't think I would, you know, be the right guy for that particular gig long term.
Do you think, is there a character from Archie Comics you think you'd spark onto in particular?
No, I don't need to. I haven't read Archie since I was a kid. I have no idea.
Archie's still
there. Yeah, they're pretty much the same. Yeah. I don't know.
I like Jughead. He's funny. He missed much. All the burgers or whatever. I think I would, I would do it like, you know, that volume of Criminal where they did the like Archie comic and the thing, and it's like about how their lives all went to shit after high school or whatever, and it's like I would do like that. Like that would be my version of it. So I think maybe just go read that volume of Criminal that did
for your day.
Well, what else are you working on? You've got Indigo Children obviously going on now, like we talked about. That's it's awesome. Only Teenage Correct. Wasteland is, well, to get back to that for a second, that wrapped up the first volume. Are we going to see more of that? There's a little bit of tease of that at the end, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, so we're into figuring that out right now, really. We want to do more, and like I've planned for pretty much the whole storyline, so we're multiple more volumes, so we're working on figuring that out. It's kind of a scheduling thing at this point, but we both really want to work on more and sort of see it through.
And what else do you got cooking that you can talk about, if anything?
So we've been I'm doing this new book that's out in a couple months that is not teenagers. It's a pretty crazy book I've been working on for a while called You've Been Canceled, and it's like a transmetric politics Judge Dredd, and it's basically like a future murder game series where people like vote on who they want to see get canceled, and then bounty hunters compete to like kill the person, and whoever gets the kill gets all the money and the fame and stuff, right? And so that's a new book I have out in June with this new publisher, Bad Cave Studios, but doing a lot of cool stuff. And yeah, like I just funded that book out of pocket until we found a publisher, because it's a super crazy idea and everyone's kind of their weak when it comes to joking about cancel culture, whatever. I want to say they're pussies, but maybe that's a little bit toxic.
Well, it feels like you scooped up the whole internet with the pitch for that book. You just got it all in one.
Yeah. So anyways, it's this amazing book. It's ultra bond cool. And so that's out in a couple of months. And then been working on a ton of books at Comixology. Obviously, I'm like finishing those up. Well, you know, the fucking Amazon shit show goes on over there. Who knows if you'll be able to read them, but we're working on them. Okay. And then, yeah, I've been, we've still working on the youth TV show, in the writer's room for that right now. And then we have a few other TV things, going that hopefully we'll be able to like announce soon, but, really just try and make the comics as cool as possible. Then if we can, set them up as TV or whatever else and like work on making cool versions of that and get some money to do a bunch more cool comics. That's really what I've been up to, right?
How many hours a day are you writing with all of that sort of multimedia stuff you just mentioned?
Well, like, not that, I mean, it's like less than you would think. I have a pretty full schedule, but it's like, the writing is either happens or it really fast or it doesn't. So a lot of time spent just thinking and figuring stuff out, right? So, but it's time consuming to oversee all the production on the books, right? Because it's like on top of the writing, I'm editing the stuff. So I got to get the letters in, you know, proofread, do this, do that. And then on top of that, do all the meetings and work and stuff on the like production company side, which is pretty much its own full-time job, but it's whatever. I'm like my own boss and you know, been able to do some cool stuff, so I'm not going to complain about it.
I did want to ask you, since you mentioned it, about the youth thing over at Amazon. I don't know how much you can talk about it, but I know you were starting to work on it the last time we had you on the show, so it seems like it's a very careful development process, is I guess the way we would put it. Whatever you can say, what is involved in doing that? Because I feel like there's been a lot of questions lately, particularly when it comes to Amazon. There was a whole flap yesterday about Phoebe Waller-Bridge getting $60 million, never producing a show. But obviously at the same time, like she's been working on stuff. She's been doing stuff. She hasn't been like, do. So whatever you can.
Snapchat.
And, yeah, she's been doing Snapchat and watching Lost.
Oh, she has been on Snapchat. She hasn't put out shit, you know?
I guess I'm curious for you. Like, it's been a couple of years. So what is involved in that? What are you doing when you're working on
it? Yeah, so just basically what people got to realize about this is it takes forever to get this stuff made because you're asking them to spend millions and millions of dollars to go and shoot it. And it's sort of reached a point now, and because you brought this Phoebe Waller-Bridge deal up, and not her specifically, but there was a glut of spending in streaming where it was like, the fucking Wild West, and they're just giving everyone these giant checks and like seeing nothing for it. I think, you know, we talk about Lost. J.J. Abrams is probably the best example of that. $300 million to fuck around for 3 years. And so they're just careful now, especially at Amazon, of what they're going to green light. But the fact that it's been this long and we're still alive and we've, you know, got a writer's room going, which is a big step. And there's been some other...
That's huge.
There's been some other stuff behind the scenes that we've gotten approval for that I think I'll get in trouble if I talk about, but it's still in motion. It just takes fucking forever. It's pretty much the answer. It's just so much money to make a show, and they're really, really careful now. And I think unless you're a super proven... like unicorn TV creator who there's maybe like 20 of them or whatever, like super small number, it gets harder and harder to get a series green light unless they're like just 100% happy with it. So it takes a while, but we're still alive out here.
All right. I mean, the fact that you have a writer's room going is super exciting because that's sort of anyone spending any money right now is a hard. I mean, it takes months. It takes sometimes 9 months to work out a contract. So, of course, it takes long to get from point A to point B.
Do you know at this point, I'm just curious because the announcement came out that Scott Snyder's and Jock's Witches is going to be animated. Since you are a comic book property, do you know if there are... Is it going to be animated or live action? Are you able to?
Or live action. Yeah,
live action. Okay.
The real people in ours. We got real boys and girls on
the Awesome. Well, that's very exciting. Kurt, this is all great stuff. Indigo Children is so cool. I highly urge everybody read the first issue because you're not going to be prepared for the second issue at all. It does some wild, awesome stuff. I'm looking forward to whatever is next from you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me and continuing to check the books out, guys. I do really appreciate it.
No worries, man.
We love them. Absolutely. Doing it. We'll keep it part of the Pyre's Pile on the staff.
There you go.
Yeah, have a good night, Kurt.
Brandon Seeker.
The Last Kids on Earth and their superhero alter egos are back in the latest installment of the graphic novel spinoff series, The Last Comics on Earth, Too Many Villains. Jack, June, Quint, and Dirk face their biggest challenge yet, creating the sequel to their hit graphic novel in a mad dash, puzzle-filled race across Apocalyptia to stop the biggest evil plan in history. Hey, you know what the creators of Last Comics on Earth's evil plan is? Make me and my kids love these books. Seriously, my younger kid is a huge fan of both the Last Kid series and the Last Comic series.
It's true.
And now I'm hooked too. The whole team has created a delightful cast of characters with some fantastic kid-friendly art throughout that will appeal to readers of all ages. Buy your copy of The Last Comics on Earth in stores today. You can also visit lastkidsonearth.com to learn more.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
All right, there we go. Once again, it is called Indigo Children, You can pick it up from Image Comics. First issue is out now. Second issue will be out at the end of the month. And now I would be remiss to mention we are supposed to have a second guest here on the show, Dan DiDio. He is doing a book called Hide and Seek, the Superpower Protection Program, that is out today. But it seems like he is in a superhero protection program himself, or maybe playing hide and seek with us.
We got to find him. That's part of the game. It's part of the game.
It's fine. He's hiding. That's how it works in the books. Yeah.
Yes. So unfortunately, he is not here at the moment. We'll see if he shows up by the end of the show. In the meantime, I think we are going to move on to our
We have a very laissez-faire, come when you're ready policy here.
I always send our guests an email. I'm like, hey, the show happens. Come whenever. It's all good.
Hey, that's why Pete shows up whenever he wants to. It's
whatever fits into my schedule.
It's free. Right? Exactly. We're free.
You know what's fun is when you're, you know, trying to you know, finish work so then you can read comics to do the show, and then you look up and you're like, oh, crap! Look at the time!
You had like a moment where you're just like, I'm late.
Yeah.
Your little alarm clock, your cartoon alarm clock is going.
Your text that was like, hey, buddy, you going to show up? And I'm like,
Well, no, you didn't have time to blur your shame hoodies. So it's clear. Yeah.
My lovely collection of hoodies over here. So.
Well, regardless, we are going to move on to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all...
Hold on, we have one comment here that is coming through from Derek Mainhart. Bring in Nat.
Well, I don't know think that's a good idea.
That's not my favorite section. Yeah, my favorite section is audience questions. And for audience questions, all you have to do is bring in Nat. All you got to do is leave a question in the comment on Facebook, YouTube, or Twitch. And we will get to it here. It can be on absolutely anything you want. Anything is fine. Even where's Dan DiDio? But we can't answer that one. I'm sorry. But that all said,
yeah, that's our
secret. You know, it's especially a little bit of a bummer because Stray Bullet, our CBC chef, made a drink for Dan's book. So I'm going to bring that up anyway. Show that off here. Super tidy there, so you probably can't see it. But it is called the Hide or Seek. And it is absolutely delicious.
Ooh, that looks... Put that in front of the camera again. I love the color on that bad boy.
Yeah, no, it's nice. Beautiful. It's very refreshing. Got a little jalapeno, some mint. I really was not able to find basil at the supermarket, but it usually has basil in it. Some gin.
Hold on a second. You couldn't find... We have another podcast where we have to review... We review candy as we're talking about the TV show Sweet Tooth. And Alex can conjure any piece of candy you've ever even heard of.
Ever been made.
He's like, special small batch Cadbury eggs. And you can't find basil, which is everywhere?
I'll tell you what, if it had been chocolate-covered basil, I absolutely would have found it.
Yeah, exactly.
As is, anyway, this is a delicious drink and a lovely tribute to Dan's book, even if we are not talking to him about it. So thank you.
Wait, did you finish the ingredients? You know, Justin did a sidebar there.
Oh, my God, they're so tiny on the screen right now. So, okay, you take some... Here, hold on. You take some sugar, jalapenos, basil, mint, lime zest, and absinthe, and muddle that all up. Then you add some lime juice, gin, mezcal, simple syrup, and some sparkling water or club soda, and pour it over ice, and it is delicioso.
Delicioso.
Yeah, delicioso.
Super
what are you guys
Mario
drinking
Brothers
tonight?
I got a little Baltimore special here. I got a little duck pin.
Duck pin.
Yeah.
Wow, named after the bowling? Isn't that a Boston thing? Or is that also Baltimore?
It's also Boston.
Oh, that's Candlepin. That's Candlepin.
Mm. Yeah. Don't get your fucking cities mixed up there, bro.
I'm getting my pins mixed. Yeah. I went down to the hotel front desk, and they had a hazy little thing IPA.
Ooh. All right. Very nice. Well, we got a question here.
We got a bunch
this
of
is oh Nat by the way, just to wrap this up, says, let the record reflect I told Alex where to find basil. He was also staring at me from across the street, so which I didn't
know. I see why you don't want to let him in here. You encounter him in your neighborhood too much.
Pretty much.
He's
all right, we got a question here. This is here we go. We brought it in. Schuykler says, favorite surprise in a comic.
Why the last man And I don't want to give it away because there's super spoilers in it. But
you can give it away. It's been out for years.
Yeah, but I just it's such a great comic and I want people to check it out. So I don't want to spoil it. But that's my favorite surprise in a comic.
Let me steal Alex's inevitable answer. And it's the Magneto Zorn reveal from X-Men.
That was not going to be my answer. I thought I was going to steal your answer, which is the reveal of the Anti-Monitor at the end of the Sinestro Corps special.
Look at that kickoff. It's true. Honestly, my brain almost always goes to Sinestro Corps whenever we get questions about, like, what's your favorite thing from a time in comics? And I'm like, no, that doesn't apply. It doesn't matter here.
I thought it would be any time they find a use for the Thoris guy or whatever the fuck his name is.
The what?
Your nerdy guy.
Oh, Thoris? Beta Ray Bill?
No, the guy who speaks all the languages, talks to computers.
Cypher?
It was just a Thoris. You know?
Oh, Thesaurus, not Thoris. Okay.
Thoris, it's very funny that Thoris and we were like, Beta Ray Bill, of course. And they're like, nope, not that at all.
I mean, I like both of those characters, so there you go. No, but just to elaborate, if anybody doesn't know what I'm talking about with the Sinestro Corps War thing, it's just this thing where, like, we already knew that Sinestro was building up these Yellow Lanterns to take on the Green Lanterns. And over the course of the book, he's building up this team of Superboy Prime, who's the Dick Superboy from another universe. He's got Cyborg Superman there. There's a bunch of other villains that I'm blanking on that are all together. And they're like, yeah, we're going to bring the pain to the whole DC universe. They're like, wow, this is going to be tough. This is a big crossover. What a big team. And they keep talking about their master the entire time for the Sinestro Corps. And you're like, I don't know who that is. And there's a perfect page flip where the way that they lay it out is everybody is bowing down to their master. They're like, I'm ready, master. I'm ready, master. And then you flip the page and it's the Anti-Monitor, gigantic, saying, as am I. And it's the first time the Anti-Monitor has ever showed up since Crisis on Infinite Earths. And it's this perfect oh shit moment of like, well, this was already pretty bad. This just got exponentially worse for everybody. And it's great. It's good stuff.
And he is so big there too. It's also like, wow, it's like someone built a Lego and left it there. And then it's like the reveal was that.
Yeah, great stuff. This is Pete's ready to move on to another question here. This is from Obvious Soul Art. Are there any other secret quizzes to be unlocked?
Justin.
Great question. Oh, is it my turn?
It's your turn, man. Get back on
All right.
dude.
Then yes. But it's going to be hard to unlock it if I haven't thought of it yet. But good luck. we always have some secret quizzes boiling.
Pete, do you have a secret quiz boiling? What is going on? What are you doing?
No, I don't have a secret. I closed the Punisher quiz. I'm hoping after, you know, maybe we get some more Daredevil Punisher love that will inspire another quiz. But as of yet, nothing.
Okay.
I'm waiting for Justin to go, though, and then I can get excited
to do yours. Matt Towson in the comments says he'd like to unlock the secret Dan DiDio quiz.
Sorry, that Dan DiDio is in another castle. Any message? This is from Ben the Border Collie. Any message you'd like me to pass on to Kevin Eastman? I might get to meet him this weekend when I'm helping out at South Carolina, I assume, Comic-Con.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. I think I speak for Pete when I say fuck Tom Waltz, though.
Yeah, let him know that. Play him that clip from the episode, Ben.
But if you are, you know, it depends on how long your interaction is with him. But I feel bad because the first time I met him, I was so excited to talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You know, as an interviewer, you want to kind of talk about things that the person wants to talk about.
And you were his doctor at that point. His kid was in the hospital, and he was like, please.
He had like a bunch of projects he was excited about, and all I wanted to do was talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and I felt bad,
All you did was kiss his hand over and over again. Kiss his precious hand.
If it makes you feel any better, Pete, and I mean this sincerely, you are 100% definitely not the first or the 10th or the 500th person to have done that to him, so...
I would just like you to walk up to him and say, hey, man, sorry everybody keeps bugging about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. You're probably over it, but also thank you for were created.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Nice.
There we go. And then after that, play him the Tom Waltz quip for our podcast. This is from Derek Mainhart. Do you drink seasonally?
If you mean all seasons, yes.
Yeah, if you mean for all the seasons, yes, we do.
Yeah,
there you go. But I mean, to answer that question, that maybe the underlying question is, do we change what we're drinking for the seasons? And I think yes, a little bit. I would say winter is more cocktails and summer is cheap canned beer for me, mostly.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
I tend to go for, like, if I'm going to go liquor, probably like a lighter liquor as it gets warmer and a darker liquor as it gets colder, like more of a bourbon whiskey type thing. So
I'm always
summer.
I'm always drinking vodka, and then every once in a while I switch up with a beer. And if warm out, it's usually a lighter beer.
That's about the only adjustment. Miller High Life in the summer, and then a nice
Pabst,
hearty cocktail.
PBR in the winter.
Yeah.
Or a Labatt
PBR
Blue.
ASAP. Yeah, something heavy like PBR for the winter.
Yeah, there you go.
This is another question here. Have any of you seen the Mario movie?
Oh, God, don't.
Yes. I saw the Mario movie. Is that a different release?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
But the question was, have you seen it? And we've answered it, so let's move on.
I saw it. Wait, Alex,
No.
Are
I saw this
playing passes?
I'm ducking it. I'm ducking it. The kids want to see it real bad.
You're not seeing it, Pete? I thought you would have seen it opening night, if anybody.
Well, the kids really want to see it, but, we're still knee-deep in Easter candy, so we got to work our way through that before you take a movie theater, and then they get all the candy they want.
What?
That's
what kind
not
of crazy rule is that?
It's
very
uncle,
funny that
you don't have to fucking follow the rules, you know what I mean? If they're rolling with you, they can get anything they fucking want, man.
Yeah, if you're the man that can't control himself around candy, and you're demanding these kids control themselves around candy.
Don't understand the connection. Maybe can you explain this for me a little further between, like, okay, once you eat all your candy, then you can go see a movie?
Yeah, because when they go see a movie, they get so much fucking candy, then we're knee deep in candy again. So it's like,
that they have to the movies in a little bag.
Yeah, that's true. I could do that. Yeah, I could, let's say, bring your baskets. I'm sure no one at the movie theater will mind.
They really won't, actually.
They probably.
So what did you think, actually, Justin? What did you think of Super Mario Brothers, the movie?
I thought I liked it sort of was like playing the game, weirdly, and I was surprised I enjoyed that because there wasn't much of a story to it, and that's just the way it was. But the fact that they mimicked the gameplay a lot and moved quickly through the story, I actually enjoyed. And the music outside of the needle drops, which were pretty bad, was amazing. The orchestrations were sick.
Yeah, 100% on the same page as you. My main reaction afterwards, I took my son midday Saturday, I think, or something like that. And it was a pretty nicely full theater. He came out and he's like, wow, that was great. And my reaction was like, yeah, they did exactly what they needed to do. Nothing more. Like, it does not go beyond that. It's not like the Lego movie where it's suddenly this treatise on how we play with toys or anything like that. It's just straight up a Mario movie. Did the thing.
Yeah.
It's good.
I'm excited for Jack Black as Bowser.
He's great. He's maybe the best part of the movie, I think. I would say.
I think so.
Yeah.
For all the talk about the voice acting and all that talk, none of the voices really did much outside of Jack Black, I thought.
Yeah. And I will say, this is not actually ruining anything. I think, if anything, it'll enhance your experience. Charles Martinet, who does the voice of Mario, where everybody was very upset, like, he didn't get to do the voice. Chris Pratt gets to do the voice. Charles Martinet actually voices two roles in the movie are really fun Easter eggy roles. So,
yeah,
cool. Right. Good stuff.
A lot of Easter eggs. I was surprised.
Yes.
Very cool.
I felt like a little bit of a sucker, but particularly in the first 10 to 15 minutes or so, I was like, oh, good. Oh, look at that. I know that thing.
Hell yeah.
Oh, there you go.
I loved all of that.
Yes.
I know. I won't say what it was, but I was like, oh, yes. I love that picture frame in the background.
Yep. 100%. I was like, cool name for that pizzeria. Yay.
And I was like, afterwards, I was like, what are you, an idiot? And I was like, yes, I am. Yeah, I am an idiot.
And also, it's like, it's 90 minutes long. It's 90 minutes long. There's been no family movies. So I was just like, oh, thank God. I can take my son to something.
Oh, thank God.
I mean, I still fell asleep briefly, but it was pretty good for
them. Oh, man.
Yeah. There's a point where it just becomes like a mess of whatever. But again, it's totally fine. Go see it. Eat that candy while the kids aren't looking, Pete, and take them to go see it.
I want to highlight before we move on. The Schoeckler comment, the needle drops weren't Black Adam bad, but they were all obvious. That's 100% spot on. They weren't as embarrassing as Black Adam. They were just what we all expected.
Yes. I also want to emphasize, I agree with you. Like, the orchestrations of the Mario themes were great. They were so good.
It was just calm. It was just like calming. I was just like, oh, this is so satisfying.
Yeah. All of that music is so deep in my bones when suddenly you hear like, I was like, we're going underground now. We're in the sewer.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I know. I wish that played when I got on the subway.
All right, this is from David. You have any fave foreign or smaller run comics or comic movies or comic book adapted shows?
Good question.
Easy one, but I'll throw out The Ink Owl. It was one of my favorite books when I was growing up. I loved reading that, was obsessed with that. Very curious how Taika Waititi is even going to approach that as a movie, because there's barely a story to that thing. It's just wildness, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. What about you guys? You got anything?
Too Cool to Be Forgotten is the first thing I thought of for a small run.
A smaller run comic. I can't think of anything. I'm trying to think of smaller run stuff. One thing that I have watched a little bit of was that I'm just gonna get back to is the is it Miles Teller did the Amazon show based on that's like sort of super obtuse based on the Ed Brubaker story.
Okay. I thought you were talking about The Offer for a second, the Paramount Plus show about the making of The Godfather. But you mean, I know what you're talking about.
Too Old to Die Young.
Yeah.
That is based on a graphic novel, and it's apparently hard to watch, but it washes over you after a while. And that's what it is from my viewing of it.
Totally unrelated to this, other than the fact that you mentioned an obscure thing that was created by a comic book writer. I had no idea about this until I was reading a random review today. Renfield, the new movie with Nicholas Holt and Nick Cage, came from a pitch from Robert Kirkman. It's not a comic book. It's not anything. It's just a movie that he pitched that they're doing that somebody else wrote. So,
but he didn't write it. Does he get? No. Does he have credit? Does he have?
Yeah, he's an
credit?
EP on it. He's an executive producer.
Wow. Nice man. That guy just getting it.
Absolutely. All right, we got one here from Tomer Dar. Thoughts on the last ep of The Mandalorian that many consider a low point for the series?
Yeah, it really depends on who you talk to, because other people consider it a high point. You want to talk about
you call it a high point?
Yeah, the power couple of Lizzo and Jack Black. I could watch that all day. Those two together were magic, and I loved it. Also, it made me laugh that the Mando is just kicking robots. That just really cracked me up. Just standing there, they're working, he's kicking them. Oh, my God. I laugh so hard at that.
It's really, you hate robots. I think, like, Pete, you love it, and I don't want to get on that track. I just think the Mandalorian that I sort of loved in season one was something so different than what it is now. And there are some aspects that are interesting. It's just so far away from what I liked that it's hard for me to be as on board as I was in the beginning.
It got a little away from the, you know, it's kind of almost like Jessica Jones season one. We all thought that was the best season.
What?
And it got a little bit weirder as it went on.
Have you only watched two TV shows? Just checking on that.
Yeah. Yes, I have. I try to keep
Family Ties and Jessica Jones season one.
Don't forget Ted Lasso. But yeah, I just think that, you know, the kind of cool Western that it started at is not where it is right now. And yeah, I mean, for some people it's okay. For others, it's kind of a low point. So.
Yeah. I will couch this in, I didn't really love this week's episode, and like Justin, I haven't really been loving the season in general, but I am still stunned that anybody considers this like a low point for the series, a jump the shark for Star Wars or anything like that. Like, here, I'm going to say something controversial, and I will say this for the direction of, I love Star Wars, right? There's a lightsaber behind me.
You have a t-shirt on normally.
Yeah.
There's a lightsaber
right
behind
now,
you.
If anybody's listening, I'm not wearing any t-shirt. I'm completely topless while I'm taping this podcast.
Not true.
A lot of Star Wars is stupid, and that's okay. Like, that's the thing. Like, a lot of it is very dumb. It's stupid. It's ridiculous. It's not. It's all over the place.
You don't have to insult us. You can just.
No, but it's not. But that's fine. Like, that's also fine. Like, at the same time, as I thought Lizzo was kind of a bad actress in this episode.
Oh!
She was.
What the fuck?
Hold on. Listen to what I'm saying here. Lizzo, bad actress in this episode. Lots of people, bad actors throughout the history of Star Wars. So who cares? It's consistent with like lots of Star Wars. Also, if you have Lizzo and Jack Black in an episode, how can you get mad? Like, Lizzo is already there. Of course she's going to be like, Grogu, sit on my lap. I'm going to feed you. Like, that's just...
100%. I love that you said something so controversial. Pete turned into a background Sopranos actor briefly in his response.
Oh,
this is what I'm saying. Like, you can't just be like, that's it for Star Wars. The thing that has been totally consistent for the past 30 years, completely at the same level of quality. And we've loved it all exactly the same way up until Jack Black and Lizzo were on here, and now I'm done. That's stupid. That's very stupid. I'm sorry.
And you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of TV from like back in the day of like the 70s TV where they were like, who's sitting here? Jack Black, Lizzo, what do you want to be characters here? Here, put on these hats. Okay, you're going to be these guys. Get the puppet. The puppet jumps around. And yeah, helmets, you go fight over there. Like, it feels very like, whatever. Like, not like... And I think my brain is broken in a good way by Andor, which was so meticulous and so like tense and raw and built like a great machine. And this just feels different. And like, again, I don't want to, wow, Pete highlighting comments all suddenly. I don't want to like yuck Pete's yum, 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 yum. So I won't, but that is what I think.
Great. Well, I'm glad we've established what we all feel exactly the same way about Star Wars. This is from Stray Bullet. Where would you like to see the next chapter of the X-Men go after the Krakoa era? I gotta say, and I think all three of us agree, Krakoa era forever.
Oh,
all right, I'll move on to the next question here.
Yeah, maybe the X-Men leave and we just stay on the island, you know?
Oh, just the barren island, just Krakoa?
Yeah, just like 22 pages each month, just like island stuff. Birds.
Where would you, Pete? Sex. You've been the most negative about the Krakoa era. Where do you want it to see it go after?
I want the Hump Island to die a horrible death, and then them all have to swim back to the shores, and maybe we're not as welcoming. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I would like them to rejoin the rest of the world so that they can be a part of things again.
I think that's what we're going to get after. I mean, we still don't know if Hickman's actually going to come back to finish all of the big, larger, like infinite plans that he has. But if he does, I think we'll get a hard reset that'll be Gray Malkin Lane mansion. It'd be back to the tradish way, and we'll pick an X-Men team, and I think it'll be very, very back to basics.
Well, that's the thing, though. I wonder what kind of X-Men team is going to be left, because
I think it'll be full basics.
It's a shit show, you know what I mean? Of like,
no, I think they'll go for like classic lineup of like Cyclops will be there, Wolverine will be there, Jean Grey, you'll get Storm. It'll be like, what they're probably going to try to do, and they're probably thinking about this anyway, is we're going to be getting the X-Men 97 cartoon at some point. They're going to try to align with that. We're going to get like that classic animated cartoon.
Well, I don't know how you're going to get Beast and Wolverine in the same room after this shit. So I mean,
it'll be fine. We'll all be fine. Don't even get me started on comics and their total consistency over the past several decades. Frederico Rosa says, do you think some deaths in comics should stay untouchable or, quote, bring them back? Specifically thinking about Bucky getting back after so long, and I can't imagine him not being part of modern Marvel. Now, just to mention for anybody who's listening who doesn't know about this, I assume most of our listeners do, but just in case, for a very long time, there were two untouchable characters in Marvel who were Bucky and Uncle Ben. Those were the two that you cannot bring back in any way until Ed Brubaker pitched bringing back Bucky as the Winter Soldier, pitched this big story. Obviously, Uncle Ben has come back in different forms, but never officially full-time. But that's just context for anybody listening. What do you guys think about this?
Well, it's hard because, you know, Brubaker proved that, you know, you can break rules because the death of Captain America was maybe one of my favorite kind of things in comics. Seeing Bucky, the Winter Soldier, become Captain America was such a cool thing. And, you know, then Falcon. So it's awesome to kind of be able to pass the mantle. You know, it just thinks that sometimes somebody's got to die and then they kind of bring them back. It really depends on the story. I'd like to think some things aren't untouchable, but sometimes a great story can prove you wrong. So if the story's great, then I'm all for it.
For me, it's like you can't just bring a character back and have them show back up like, hi, I'm here again, because then it cheapens the whatever took them away, and it doesn't give them anything to do because the story is about their absence often. So I think the reason the ones we're discussing, Bucky specifically, succeeded so well, and Spider-Gwen, while we're talking like Gwen Stacy, another sort of untouchable character, the writers found a way to bring them back in a way that was like innovative, made them something different and new while also using their backstory as meaningful emotionally to them as a character and the characters around them. So I think it's the comics like the only medium where you can bring characters back from the death and everyone's like, sick, let's go. Anywhere else, it's like a problem.
Yeah, like real life. Big problem.
Real life, documentary.
Well, I think Pet Sematary worked out pretty good.
Yeah, I think so. Pete,
not real though, right? Pet Sematary? Yeah. You know, remember that's not real because we've had a lot of talks about that.
That's true. That's a good point.
100% agree with what you guys are saying. The only thing that I'll add is I think it's also very helpful if you have a long-term story for bringing that character back. Yeah. Like the reason the Bucky thing works, it was because the plan wasn't, we bring Bucky back, shocker, period. You know, it was, we have this long-running mystery through multiple issues of a series. Who is the Winter Soldier? What's going on with him? Oh my God, he is Bucky. What does that mean for him? What does that mean for Captain America? Now he's starting to get his memory back. Now they knew this at the point that they were bringing back, Captain America dies and Bucky has to take over and become Captain America. What does that do to Bucky? And then of course, Captain America comes back and that's its own separate issue. But like all of those things really layered in. That's the reason Bucky stuck around as a character, not because they brought back Bucky for one issue as the Winter Soldier. And he's like, it's me, Bucky. And then that was it. It was, what did it mean? And creating him and crafting him and recrafting him, because he's a character that was gone for decades. We don't know him as readers. We weren't alive. So it's discovering him in a new way. So I do think that's something important to think about when you're bringing back a character, is what is that long-term story as well. Let's see if we got anything else here. A lot of statements.
And you can save those statements for my favorite section, audience statements.
There was some spoilery stuff about Mario. Here we go. Michael Tillman says, if Dad doesn't show up, will Alex's impersonations of him make a return to the show? I don't know. I don't know if they will. I'm not sure. Maybe they will. We'll see.
Don't do it now. He's he won't show
Dan's
up.
Dan's here. Dan's here. Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, well, Dan's hide and seek. Here. Hide and seek is out today. I got a whole blackboard behind me with clues about what goes on at hide and seek. I'm not going to tell you what they are, but there's 52 of them. There's 52 clues, and they're very good.
No wonder he didn't show up.
Yeah, do you think he's going to be insulted by not he didn't show up and now we're straight up?
Now we created a cocktail for him and are talking about his book nonstop. I think he'll be okay. Oh, I don't know. Never forget how you loved Green Lantern's movie costume and Pete's what? And what is this in reference to? Did I love
That's in reference to you loved Green Lantern, the movie, including the costume, and Pete was what?
No, I didn't love the whole movie. I enjoyed it more than other people, but
you liked
this generation's Star Wars.
It was not a good movie. And I agree with Ryan Reynolds. The editor didn't even watch it.
Mm. This is from Derek. I know you just discussed it, but could you fight about Mandalorian again in Weekly
Geek? You got it.
Absolutely, man. Yep. Absolutely. And we got anything else here? I'm just sort of scanning through. Here we go. This is from Prime NRG. Any excitement on this new DC or hero, the announced Xanth? I don't know anything about this. I missed this announcement. Who is Xanth? Is this Piers Anthony Xanth? Is this a character that makes lots of women's panties fall out in a way that when you read it as a kid, you're like, haha, that's a funny joke. And then later on, you're like, wait a second, that's weird. Why are you writing about that so much?
Oh, no, we did talk about Xanth. It was just part of the Lazarus Planet stuff where they were introducing characters willy-nilly very quickly.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And I actually liked this story. There were some good...
Which one was this?
This was Dark Fate, I believe. Lazarus Planet Dark Fate. And there were a couple... I think each story introduced a new character, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah. We talked about how we liked them.
Yes. So Xanth was one of those. I agree. I love Xanth.
I like the excitement of new characters, new possibilities.
They have the upcoming comic Spirit World coming out next month. That was the one with Batgirl where she ends up in the Spirit World and this character is in Gotham, I think, and can communicate with the Spirit World. Yeah, that was really good. Now that I remember what it is, that was good, and I'll definitely read that. I'm excited. This is from Edward Doherty. What about the Rey Star Wars news? For anybody who didn't hear that, there are going to be three new Star Wars movies at some point that were announced. The first
Alex is so skeptical about these.
I'm only skeptical based on experience. That's all.
Yeah.
They've announced so many Star Wars movies. Yeah. They've announced so many Star Wars movies at this point. And I want to remind you, most of Star Wars is dumb, as we previously established earlier in this podcast.
Stop it.
Anyway, the three movies that they announced, one is one that takes place 25,000 years ago, directed by James Mangold, that shows you the first Jedi. Then there's another one that takes place in the Mandalorian era and is going to be a big movie that's going to bring together all the TV characters for one final battle against the Imperial Remnant. And then the third movie stars Daisy Ridley, once again as Rey, 15 years after the events of Rise of Skywalker, where she is rebuilding the Jedi Academy. What do you guys think about this one?
I'm the most excited about revisiting the future of Star Wars. And Rey's a great character, I think. Rebuilding the Jedi Academy is the... Great. Rebuilding the Jedi Academy is the least fun and interesting part of that to me. It's like, that feels like, let's negotiate some trade contracts. I'm like, just go do stuff. Go have an adventure and a battle and live. You don't need to build infrastructure. That's what we do in our regular world.
What do you think, Pete? What are your feelings on these movies?
I'm excited. I just think that Rey is a great character played by a fantastic actress. And I want more. I think hopefully we'll get some new, better stuff.
Totally agree with that. The Rey announcement was the one that like got me emotionally in my feels, where I was like, oh, she's coming back. That's so great. So I'm very excited about that. The thing that raises a little bit of alarm bells is, not to talk about Damon Lindelof the whole podcast, but that was the one that he was co-writing about a month before he left the movie. He gave this interview where he's like, man, I don't know, if you can't write a Star Wars movie, like you can't figure out a reason it should exist, you shouldn't be doing it. And then a month later, he was like, well, I've left this project. And then Stephen Knight, whose writer has worked on Peaky Blinders and a bunch of other things, took over as the writer. He's a good writer as well, so that's good. But that definitely, to me, I was like, I don't know. Let's see what happens. But I think doing one-off movies in different eras, in theory, is a very smart way of approaching it, rather than here is our epic new trilogy of movies, you know? So... that's good. I'll say that's a positive. And we got one last one here I'll throw on from Stray Bullet. You guys never answered my question last week about my robot vac. I'm starting the apocalypse. Spoiler, it hasn't happened yet. I don't remember what the question was exactly.
But I don't know. Maybe it was something about, do you trust robot vacuums? You know what I mean?
My parents told me they got a mopping vacuum as well as their robot vacuum. A mopping robot as well as their vacuum robot. I asked them if they fight, and they were like, I don't know. We haven't turned them on at the same time yet.
So. Oh my God! It's two separate.
Sounds like they're starting the apocalypse.
Blackston over there—they got all sorts of robots running around that house.
All right, there we go. That is it for your audience questions. Woo-hoop. We are going to move to our next section, which is trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right,
Jay LePage, the star of trivia.
All right. Do we have somebody for this, or are we doing first?
No, we're
going
to do a hand up.
All right. So this part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 to Midtown Comics, or, of course, Long John Silver for some reason. And, we just need you to volunteer. You can be watching on YouTube or the Book of Faces or any of the other stuff, and you will win a gift card.
Ooh, we got
card.
Prime Energy.
All right.
So Prime Energy got hand up first. Oh, no. Did Easy Reader raise hand last time? We just missed Easy Reader again.
Oh, no. Easy Reader, we're sorry.
Okay. If we did that, Prime Energy, you are... It's Easy Reader's turn, everybody said. So I'll tell you what.
Wow.
Prime Energy... No. We did say last week we're going to have Easy
Reader.
Yes, we did.
We definitely did.
So Prime Energy... Hit us up, comicbookclublive@gmail.com, and we'll get you set up for next week if you're going to be here to see the show. Yeah. In the meantime, Easy Reader, you can answer in the comments for this week's show.
Yeah.
Pete, are you ready?
Well done, guys. Way to be diplomatic about it. And also,
that's
just Prime Energy. If you can't do next week, let us know in the email when you can, and we'll schedule you then.
We
can take care of everybody. All right, great. Here we go. Today's trivia is a topical comic news and a small nod to the legend Michael Lerner, R.I.P. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. All right, here we go. Question number one. Marvel announced some new X-Men titles. What is one of them? Is it A, X-Men, but more creepy because Beast has cloned himself and made Wolverine minions and is stressing me the fuck out? B, Dark X-Men, or C, Michael Buffer? So is it A, which is just a rant, or is it B, Dark X-Men?
Hmm.
Which, you know, let's make X-Men darker. You know what I mean? Like, let's really, it's not dark enough. Let's just dark it up.
Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah. Okay, B, yeah, great. All right. So, cool.
Really good.
Question number two, there's a new Batman Beyond comic, which I'm very excited about, coming out at the end of July, called Blank. Is it A, neo-gothic Batman Beyond? Is it B, a creepier real name? Or C, Woody Omens?
Omens?
Yeah, it's a creepy real name. Woody Omens. Could you imagine if that was your
Omens.
Name? So neo-gothic is the one that would be considered the real.
Yeah, Easy Reader said A.
That's the right answer. Here it is.
There we go. Last one. Question number three. There is a new cool Image imprint book that is dropping this fall called Blank. Is it A, a haunted girl, B, fist circles in the air, or C, Arsenio Hall?
B and C feel very similar.
Yeah, B and C tend to be kind of, if you're looking for...
You might just do... Maybe just get to A and B. Aren't we at a point where we can just combine B and
so?
C?
No. Three. You don't want to leave out the tribute to a deceased star.
That's
the main function. When we...
When
we created the show, we're like, how best to pay tribute to the deceased stars in our lives? I know, the third answer of some sort of trivia question, then we kind of worked backwards from there into a comic book talk show.
We wanted to honor people. Honor the dead is how we first met.
Easy Reader is correct. It is A. And of course, Zelvin knows we're talking about the 1989 All-Star Cast Harlem Knights and all these C answers.
Yeah, not to, and before we move on here, I just want to mention, do you guys remember that, right? When I was working at the pit and you came into the lobby and I saw you and I'm like, you want to honor the dead, right?
Yeah, I was holding several memorials to local celebrities. And you were like, hey, you want to do a show where we honor those celebrities?
And I was, I was dressed in all black, you know, ready to start it, you know?
I went. I had just recently gone to Midtown Mortuary and had a bag full of ashes.
Now, before we talk about what is coming out this week, I do want to give a shout out to this week's sponsor. This week's show is sponsored by our good friend Juan Espinosa, the man behind Beard and Man Comics. The goal of the company is to create stories showcasing Hispanic cultures, and they've got two great titles, Adventures of a System Admin and Mythology Stories. If you're looking for a fun book about hacking into computers that comes from an actual place of knowledge, definitely check out all six issues of Adventures of a System Admin. And you could also check out Mythology Stories, which is part of a successful Kickstarter campaign that was highlighted as a project we love by the platform. The comics are available in all major digital platforms, such as Amazon, Apple Books, Comic Central, and Library Pass. You can also find the physical copies and a great amount of merchandise at the main website, beardedmancomics.com. Now, before we start to wrap up here, new comics are coming out all the time. What are you guys looking forward to?
Well, there's a lot of great comics out tomorrow, and I'm very excited to talk to you guys about it on the stack. But I'll tell you, one that really jumps out at me is Usagi Yojimbo Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number one.
Really?
Really? That's a shocker.
And then Danger Street number 5. Yeah, you didn't see that one coming.
Holy shit, Pete, going up to bat for Tom King. Don't always see that. I'm going to go with Briar number 4 by Christopher Cantwell. Mm. A comic dealing with the Sleeping Beauty story and bringing it up to date in a big fantasy story, which I've been really enjoying. Also, The Seasons Have Teeth number 1 for Boom Studios. I really enjoyed. Dude. As a standalone, it's coming out tomorrow, so I will enjoy it. And that is a fun one-off, maybe it feels like a one-off, but it feels like it also may be continuing a story set in a world where the seasons are a little more aggressive than our current seasons.
Yeah, lots of great stuff, like you guys were saying, coming out tomorrow. I will give a shout out to 8 Billion Genies number 8 from Image Comics, the final issue of this story about a world with formerly 8 billion genies. Very curious to see how that ties up. And also another one, the Sandman Universe, Night Country, The Glass House number 1.
Great call.
Man, those Sandman Universe, Night Country books are so terrifying, so excited / nervous about it being back. If you haven't picked it up today, definitely do, because it is wild and crazy. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Kurt Pyers for coming on. Yeah. Check out Image Comics Indigo Children, out in stores now with issue 1, issue 2 coming out later on. Also, he wasn't here, but if you want to check out Dan DiDio's Hide and Seek, the Superpower Protection Agency, Protection Program, excuse me, that's in stores today. Next week, we have a packed show. Mark Russell is going to be back on the show to talk about Second Coming Trinity and all of his other projects. Also, J.C. Barber and Wes Watson are going to be here to talk about Count Dante. Kalani Hubbard and Louis Gaudino are going to be here to talk about the Sky Hoshi anime. A couple of other things we want to plug from our end. Sons of a Gun, our DC podcast, is ongoing with recaps and rewatches and reviews and rereads and other re-re things. Yeah. But no Riri Williams, because that's the Marvel Universe, which we cover over on Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, where we've been doing Marvel news podcasts every week. That has been a lot of fun. And Riverdale After Dark, our Riverdale podcast, is back, baby! And crazier than ever, and things go absolutely wild, as you will all see. Patreon.com/comicbookclub if you'd like to support the show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram or TikTok, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Please welcome out Dan DiDio.
Oh, no time. We're out of time.